I'm 6'5", 220, and there's two of me.
Here in sunny Asia with the Winklevoss twins, and they have just embarked on a world tour, and this is one of the hops on that world tour. Where are you guys being? Where are you going?
So we'll try and remember.
We started in Miami at the Bitcoin conference, Bitcoin 2023. The first world stop was in London. And then we went to Ireland, then Switzerland, then Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and here we are in Singapore. And next stop is Hong Kong.
And then back to the U.S.?
Back to the U.S.
And how many countries? I mean, Gemini is a global operation now. How many countries are you guys in?
About 70 countries.
70. Okay. And so... and we're like most of the user base is now outside the US, most of the business is moving outside. Is that right?
So right now the US is our biggest market, but we believe that there's going to be a flippening and that actually APAC region and MENA region will actually become our largest because of the current state of regulatory affairs in the US. It's just the environment's hostile and you just can't get anything done. And so we're on this tour to figure out where we want to invest more in the future for Gemini and for crypto. And we often say that crypto is global and so is Gemini. And so if the US is not ready, well, we're not going to wait around and the industry is not going to wait around.
Absolutely. I mean, I've heard good things about Vara in particular, like the Dubai, you know, the regulator. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts. Like, what are the top jurisdictions, you know, best for crypto that you've seen?
Yeah, so Vara is very forward thinking. They're embracing crypto. There's ADGM, Abu Dhabi Global Markets. Mm-hmm. Hong Kong recently released a framework in June 1st, I believe. So that's super encouraging. We're going to go visit Hong Kong. Of course, Singapore is licensing entities through MAS. And then we hold a license through the FCA in London, as well as the central bank in Ireland. But MiCA, the EU framework, which will, I think, go into effect this summer, that's also super encouraging. And believe it or not, Europe beat the United States.
Right? I know. Yeah. It's actually, like, actually, you want to talk about that? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just staggering that a bunch of countries in Europe could get their, you know, get it together to create a first principles framework for crypto. And the U.S. is still infighting, and there's all this dissonance. So if you look at the U.S.
We should talk about the benefits of getting that one license to rule them all, so to speak.
Right.
So in the U.S. right now, to operate a crypto company that like an exchange or custodian like Gemini, you need to get trust company license, let's say, in certain states. You need to get MTL licenses in other states.
Everywhere.
So you need to basically go through 50 licensing processes. And so,
and then when you're done, you could have the federal government say, wait, that's not enough.
And you need to get like fingerprinted, like people don't understand what a pain it is to get even an MTL.
It's totally. Like, and we're all willing to do the work, but think about the cost. What's the barrier to entry to get into the market?
Right.
And so in, we know the origin stories and the creation stories of our best companies, they come out of garages.
Right.
Or they come out of dorm rooms. They're oftentimes college dropouts that build these companies that become the FANG companies in, you know, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, and they become the biggest drivers of the U.S. economy. And so the barrier to entry in those companies was much, for those companies, much lower. In crypto, you have to raise something like $10 million.
Just to get started.
Yeah, hire a battery, an army of lawyers, just to get licensed to then start to see if you have product market fit. And so such a high barrier to entry, it makes it impossible for a lot of founders to innovate and build in crypto. And so it's bad for competition, it's bad for innovation, and ultimately it's bad for consumers because it just doesn't ship as much value to them. So having a clear, streamlined licensing pathway for companies to comply who want to do the right thing is invaluable to the free market economy that creates all of this prosperity and wealth.
And it's,
so the trajectory is garage, dorm room, and now law firm.
Yeah.
And you're sitting around a table with your lawyers trying to figure out.
I got started in my law firm's garage. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right, not how to build your product, but basically how to stay out of the crosshairs of the regulatory.
Yeah, I mean, and everyone's becoming part-time lawyers and policymakers and whatnot. And we're spending all of our time dealing with this because there's so much confusion and there's so much chaos. And I know you were about to say this, Cameron, earlier about specifically an example of this confusion in the U.S.
Yeah, so the current CFTC calls Ether a commodity. The New York AG, Attorney General, calls Ether a security. Hmm. The previous SEC said that Ether was a commodity. And the current chair of the SEC, when asked under oath a question of whether Ether is a security or commodity, refuses to answer the question.
Yeah.
That's the state of play in the U.S. regulatory establishment.
Is Ether a commodity or a security?
And again, it depends on the facts and the law, and if there's a group of individuals.
I'm asking about the facts and the law sitting in your seat and the judgment you are making.
And so, Mr. Chair, I think you would not want me to prejudge because I'm also...
But you have prejudged on this. You've taken 50 enforcement actions. We're finding out as we go, as you file suit, as people get Wells notices on what is a security in your view.
And just imagine if there was that kind of confusion around what a share of Apple stock was. You'd have no Apple. You'd have no Silicon Valley because you can't have capital formation. No one's going to invest in these startups if they're not sure if they're allowed to or not. And so all of these major drivers of the US and the prosperity story and creating and generating generational wealth doesn't happen.
Right. And it's, you know, the thing is, it's not even in your guys' interest. I mean, some people would say, oh, should I put up regulatory moats and barriers and so on? But you want competition. I think I do. I mean, we want free markets. We want entrepreneurship. We want founders.
Yeah, we don't want to win because you have more money to get more licenses.
Right.
That's the wrong type of friction.
Exactly.
We want to build.
That's
and
right.
We want to compete and let the best company that innovates the most, the quickest, win.
And, you know, the thing about this is there are signs of light. I totally agree with you at the federal level in the U.S. So that there is the McHenry bill that looks decent, that it's a little bit of a, you know, trying to still force crypto into the SEC, CFTC framework, but get under the constraints, it's certainly better than the alternative.
Right.
And then there's also at the state level, there's definitely pro-freedom. You know, Wyoming is doing good stuff with the DAO law, and Texas has right to hold Bitcoin shall not be infringed, and there's a minor protection acts and anti-CBDC. There's some good stuff that's happening at the state level, and some, you know, I'm not sure if they'll be successful, but at least efforts at the federal level. And there's guys like, you know, on both sides of the aisle, like Ro Khanna or Wyden are like pretty good on Bitcoin. And of course, you know, there's folks on their side, DeSantis or Ted Cruz have been pretty positive. But I agree with you in general, the regulatory state is just fighting crypto tooth and nail, but not elsewhere, because much of the rest of the world doesn't take it for granted, right?
Correct.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of good efforts, but right now the SEC and other regulators are just taking a regulation through enforcement strategy or attitude to this. So they won't tell you what you need to do to comply. They won't tell you these are the roads, they're paved, there's a speed limit. If you go above, you're speeding. If you go below, you're good. And there isn't that path for people who want to comply and do things the right way, but there is a stick.
Yes.
And it's all stick, and you're in bounds until you're out of bounds.
And you know, they do this thing where it's totally fake, where they'll say, oh, you know, just, you know, to the public, they'll say, all these guys have to do is come in and register. And that's just completely fake. You know, but why don't you tell people how fake that is? Because it's really important that get out there.
Yeah, we had an application with the CFTC for 3 years, and we just pulled it. It was going nowhere for derivatives. And it's just simply not true.
You guys have, in fact, like the Bitcoin ETF, that's now 10 years old, if I'm not mistaken. Like,
I think we filed in July of 2013. So it's a decade old. We currently don't have an application pending, but there's a lot of other efforts doing that. And that just doesn't make any sense. The fact that we don't have clarity on Ether and it's been out for almost a decade. It's just like silly.
And just to sort of break this down for folks who are newer to crypto, there's this concept in the US and I think in a lot of jurisdictions around the world of a commodity or a security, and they're regulated very different. But in short, a commodity is much loosely regulated. And so with cryptos, there's this concept where a crypto can start off as a security, but over time might become a commodity.
Right, more decentralized.
Because it's sufficiently decentralized.
Right.
And so there seems to be, the only thing that US regulators seem to agree on is that Bitcoin is a commodity, but they won't agree on any other crypto.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, with Ether, even if it did start off as a security, I'm not saying that it did, but let's say it did, and then 10 years later, is it still the same Ether,
right,
same Ethereum? Is it still the same project when it was launched? And so there should be a framework or guidance or criteria around when a token starts as a security, perhaps, and when it becomes a commodity. And the only thing we have to look towards is actually an enforcement action and what that judgment might be with Ripple. So the SEC sued Ripple. It said it's a security. And the world still doesn't know the answer to that question because it's being adjudicated right now in a US court. And that judgment may come down and it may say that it's a security, but it very well may say it's a commodity.
Yeah.
And so there's total confusion. And if Ripple's a commodity, then Ethereum most certainly is as well. And maybe others fall in there as well. So this idea of come in and comply to what?
Right.
Right. And it'd be one thing if you enforced or litigated an existing rule book and you said, okay, these are the rules and you didn't play by the rules, but there's no rule book.
Yes.
So they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars litigating companies that are trying to do the right thing and working it within the spirit of the existing laws that don't fit crypto. It's square peg, round hole. It's a colossal waste of taxpayer and government resources. It makes no sense. There's no vibrant market with regulation through enforcement.
Yes. And
just to put another point on that, the tests that adjudicate or that will be used, sort of the acid tests of what is a security, what's a commodity, are 80 some odd years old.
Yes.
And they revolve around an orange grove. The Howey test is around an orange grove. And they predate the internet. They certainly predate crypto.
Right.
And like Cameron said, it's round peg, square hole, or square peg, round hole.
Right.
And why are we trying to fit it's like fitting 100-year-old laws to the internet, something that's totally new.
Yep.
We should be sitting around and understanding like what this is and taking a first principles approach. And it would be amazing if the regulators who taxpayers pay to be the experts at this could just get into a room over a long weekend and hammer this out.
Well, it's funny because basically you made the point that, you know, they're regulating by enforcement, which is like a policeman. The laws aren't published, but they just shoot people at random if they think they cross the line. Like the penalty, they won't even tell you that it's the street isn't marked, but they just blam, 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 that you have to figure out where the lines are that way. Moreover, Hinman actually said Ethereum was decentralized years ago.
Yes.
And so they've actually re-injected uncertainty into this whole thing.
Well, and there's also videos of Gary Gensler, the current chair, saying that there's, during a lecture, he was a professor, lecturer at MIT, saying that there's thousands of cryptos and most of them are not securities.
It's so funny. You know,
so what changed?
You know, they just went after, you know, an exchange, they published a quote, and you could just quote Gensler against himself, you know, like back and forth like this. And it's literally something where I think he's in power now and he just wants to try to make a name for himself by attacking people, right?
Imagine if the head of the FBI couldn't tell you what constituted a crime.
Right, that's exactly.
Wouldn't answer the question.
Yeah.
Like
it's so un-American. You see this in the movies, you read it in the books.
Yeah,
when did our country become so anti-innovation?
It's, you know, it's what's interesting about this is I do think we're going to win this battle overall. And the reason I think we're going to win is 10 years ago, the SEC, the regulatory state, wouldn't have even had to fight. We wouldn't have had the distribution to have this conversation, to get it onto the internet, to have people see. Like they were just won by default because they point at a company and it dies. Now they're making the unwise decision of attacking everybody at once, right? They're going after everybody in the entire space. And so nobody, you know, everybody knows that there's, if everybody's a criminal, nobody's a criminal, you know? Right. It's, and moreover, actually, you know, they did miss. I shouldn't say that they didn't go after everybody because they didn't go after FTX.
Right, right.
Right? Like all the ones that went bust, SEC was nowhere to be found.
They did sue Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, that's true. Oh, that was a huge consumer protection.
Kim Kardashian. Getting sued by the SEC used to mean you probably did something wrong. And now it means you probably did something right.
It's becoming an inverted, like it's like the Soviet Union, right? Where there were laws on the books, but you know, the good guys were the ones the laws were enforced against. It's like this inversion of, you know, like a Soviet kind of bureaucracy.
Yeah, and
it's become a rites of passage.
Yeah.
And they've diluted their brand so heavily because there's just no signal anymore. What does it mean? The market's shrugged off all of it. In fact, Bitcoin's the best performing asset this year. So I think that it's a damaging approach.
Yep. I mean, look at the companies who have been sued or about to be sued. Gemini, Kraken, Coinbase. And look at the ones that weren't sued.
Yeah.
FTX, Terra Luna, what other blowups?
Celsius.
Celsius.
Right.
And so
they have 100% false positive and false negative rate. It's a perfect score. They're perfect, except in the wrong direction. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. It does not feel like America. It feels like third world. It feels like yep. Venezuela. It, you know, America, we're a land of laws, right? The Constitution, and there's guidelines and there's clarity and there's habeas corpus and there's Miranda rights and there's due process and there's all these protections. But if you build in crypto, it's a different country.
Right. No, part of it is if we go to like first principles on this, it is a collision between the network and the state. This is something, you know, I talk about in mm-hmm. the Network State book, mm-hmm. right? Like essentially, are we going to be having a global uniform rule of law through the internet where anybody from any country gets the same smart contract and anybody from any country can access the same capital markets under the same terms, which is, in my view, the sort of freedom and equality that like are part of the American ideal, right? Or is it going to be a bureaucrat that just determines who he likes and doesn't like? And, you know, I'm not even sure who he does like besides Sam Bankman-Fried. Okay. Besides SBF, I'm not sure who gets.
Yeah, if you go by the amount of times that they met, then he would be
their number one guy.
Number one guy.
Yeah.
So, and the campaign contributions.
The campaign contributions. So I mean, that's the thing is it's really based on how much you give.
Of this is air cover because.
Yeah.
We should talk about
this crypto bro fraudster bankrolled an election.
Exactly.
And then, is this good CYA air cover?
Right.
To now go beat down on
the industry. We should unpack the magnitude. I think it was 100 million plus for at least SBF, and maybe his number two did 70 million. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars
a lot
being
politics.
Donated to the Democratic
Party. Which put them up as the biggest mega donors in the entire...
I think it was the number two, but yes,
number
of that,
two.
Of that
okay.
cycle.
So
yes.
it's $100 million... put you at number two. It's not they're one of 100.
Yeah. No, these are huge. And I think it's something where I think you're right. The overcorrection is to like cover up the fact that they were basically on sides with the bad guy in this space.
Right.
You know?
That's what it feels like.
But you know, it's funny because you know, as bad as that is, a lot of other countries are really good. Like mm-hmm. Palau has rolled out, it's like an RNSID. I mean, even China has better crypto regulations, potentially, at least in Hong Kong, which is incredible. Dubai, El Salvador. I mean, where are the places, the spots of light? Because you just did this world tour. You're in the middle of a world tour.
So I think that Dubai, the UAE is definitely a bright spot. I think Singapore is as well. And we have a team here. We've actually had a team here for a couple of years now, about 25 people, looking to scale that up and continue to invest in Singapore and this region as a whole. I think MENA is going to be a big part of the next growth. And then also Hong Kong with their new regulatory framework. And then MiCA in Europe is encouraging. So those are the key areas that we've been visiting and we think that are good for building in crypto. And this...
What about Japan? I've heard good things about Japan recently. There's a lady there who's working on this Waka, who's been working
on it. Yeah, we haven't done research on that. But now that you say it, we'll look into it.
Yeah, they've done some very smart stuff with AI regulation, evidently recently, where they said copyrighted material can be used for AI. training, right? Mm. They're trying to take a tech. They want to get out of their lost decade. They want to bring innovation back. You know, Japan used to have Sony and all this stuff, right? Before the iPhone.
They disrupted all the U.S.
Yeah.
Companies. Is there any U.S. television makers anymore? I think Zenith was the last one standing at one point.
Interesting. You know that industry better than I do.
But Japanese electronics, they completely disrupted.
Dominated.
Yeah. They used to be amazing.
The U.S. market.
Yeah. And I think they want to kind of bring innovation back to Japan in a sense. And so I know for sure they're thinking about opening up crypto banking and stuff like that. So that's just something to monitor.
Right. So if you think of the technologies, if you want to be a home for the future, what are those technologies? It's definitely crypto.
Yep.
It's definitely AI. And there's definitely other ones. But the human capital that you attract, it's PhD students.
Yeah.
They're brilliant engineers. These are people you want.
You want
in your economy,
yep,
contributing to it and building and creating wealth and plowing it back in. And I think I worry that there's this huge complacency in the US because it's been the top dog for so long. And so much happened on US soil. The semiconductor industry, the internet companies, Web 1, Web 2. But we live in a different world today.
Yep.
And crypto and Web3 are up for grabs. There's nothing sacrosanct about the soil in Silicon Valley. And people are more mobile than ever, especially post-COVID.
Yep.
We prove to ourselves that we can be productive anywhere. We can hire people from anywhere. And our companies now are in the cloud and our workforces are in the cloud. So the idea that this will be the same story is not accurate.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And I mean one of the challenges is the ruling class is a gerontocracy.
Right. Yep.
Can they even work computers?
Right. It's funny, the younger people, like Bukele is like 40 something and he gets Bitcoin. Macron, actually, I've heard like France has reasonably good crypto regulations. He's also like a younger guy, may get it. Of course, there's some older people who get it, and you know, it's just 100%. Sure. But I do think that that's a part of it, is the system that they've grown up with is the fiat system. It must always be the fiat system. Anything against that is totally bad. You must be evil, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, a lot of them were alive during when the Marshall Plan was being
built. Yeah. Like, this is like, you know, as much as I respect, for example, Buffett or Charlie Munger, they're still in this headspace where it's like, you know, they just don't get something that could not be done by the U.S. government. Like, that could
be outside. The U.S. government will settle trade with its Navy and it will be in U.S. dollars.
Right.
And the year is 1945.
Yes, exactly.
But the year today is 2023 and the rest of the world has moved on, and they want a part of this too. They want a part of the future. And because the US won the past does not mean it's going to win the future. And we had a rowing coach who said that gold medals, if you bring them with you, the ones you've won in the past with you to the next race, they get really heavy.
Oh, that's such a great, especially from you guys, that's a great line. Because you just can't rest on your laurels.
You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. And it's moving so fast. And I think that if you don't support crypto, then you're short crypto.
Right.
And you're really short the future. And that's just a very dangerous place to be. And it's moving so fast. And I think a lot of countries that we visited understand that. And nobody wants to be left behind. And there is a real risk. I think the U.S. misses this. As Tyler was mentioning, that Web 1 and 2 were one, you know, in the U.S. largely, huge innovation drivers. But Web3 is up for grabs, and it's just not a given at all.
And look at Hong Kong has changed their position.
I can't
believe
it.
Because
amazing.
They recognize, oh my gosh, this is an amazing opportunity, because the U.S. regulators and leaders are fighting like a high school cafeteria.
That's right. And I think another big part of it is crypto is, It's obviously innovations, all the things you talk about. It's also freedom. Like all of these Chinese liberals, all of these folks, many people in China, like it's a huge country, they've got different opinions. A lot of the people who are pro-freedom there are pro-crypto.
What about the cognitive dissonance of the folks who dislike crypto in the States, who say they stand for financial inclusion?
Oh, of
and
course.
Access. So yeah. Elizabeth Warren would be a great example of someone who says they stand for the things that crypto actually can deliver.
Right.
But she's taking the position of the bankers in the establishment.
You can show it right there. You don't actually have financial inclusion if you're not allowing somebody to effectively be their own bank.
Right.
Right. You're fundamentally setting up a two-tier system of those who have banking licenses, which are very, very hard to get nowadays, and those who don't. And these guys have administrative privileges, and then the average Joe doesn't. Whereas we have it flat, you know.
Right? Yeah, and if you think of banking's a pyramid, mm-hmm. and at the bottom of the pyramid is the dispossessed, the right. unbanked,
yep.
and that's the majority of the world. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but it's billions of people
yep.
don't actually have a bank they can go to and get a bank account. And then you go up the ladder and there's the underbank. So folks who get some amount of banking services, but not really a full-fledged bank account. And then you go a little bit higher in the pyramid and you get folks who can be banked. But that's the top of the pyramid. And even inside the top of the pyramid of the larger pyramid, it's a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you show up to JP Morgan with $500, you get a certain bank account with a certain amount of access and privileges. If you show up with $1 million, they might invite you to join their private wealth bank.
Right.
And so you get a whole nother suite
of services
and
so on.
Services.
Yep. Right.
And then if you show up and you're deemed high net worth
right.
at that point. And then if you show up with $100 million, you get a whole nother set of access and privileges because you are deemed ultra high net worth. So even in the current system of being banked, it's a complete pyramid.
Right.
And pyramids are inherently unfair and they're unstable. And the only thing that can flatten that pyramid down and level the playing field and put everyone on the same plane is crypto.
Yep. Because yeah, go ahead.
No, and if the bankers could have figured this out, they would have figured it out. They've, God knows they've had enough time.
So, you know, an important demographic for you on this is probably going to be India over time. You guys are going there
yep.
this year.
We're actually building an office there right now. And
oh, awesome.
We'll probably have 50 plus people by the end of the year.
All right, maybe we'll put up the link, gemini.com/jobs.
Yeah, careers, I think.
Careers.
Yeah,
okay, great.
We're hiring, yeah.
Great. So... So tell me about, you know, obviously I think a lot about India. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on India.
Yeah, so we're building an office there of technologists and engineers. A lot of people know this, a lot of people don't, but India's got an incredible culture of technology and engineering. And most of Silicon Valley's actually been Indians for many decades. And so we're building a development center there, but we also think that it's a really important market to provide services and products to. So we'll be working.
I'd say much of Silicon Valley's been Indians. Much, but yeah. not most, but a large percentage.
Correct? Yeah, yes, yeah. Yes. I'm getting wrong, but a large percentage,
yes,
right? And
yes.
so we're going back to the source.
Sure. The mother load. It's so funny. Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, it's a really exciting growing market. And
yep.
we're going to look to find ways to open up there and operate.
That's great. Yeah, I think also India is a constituency that it is a market. It's absolutely a market. But it's also in a sense a political constituency for shifting the world order because, a lot of Indians are the underbanked that you talked about, right? They're folks who don't have access to, you know, JPMC and Chase and whatnot, but they have an internet connection because they've got a smartphone. So they've got access to the blockchain on the same terms as you and we wouldn't have it any other way, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And that is actually pretty novel. Now, yes, India's domestic payment systems have improved a lot. I give a lot of credit to India's infrastructure. But sort of like domestic phone calls and foreign phone calls, right? You have like domestic line and international lines.
Right.
Like domestic payments. And then crypto for international is actually pretty advantageous to a lot of Indians. So I think that's an important, like just political demographic for the world in terms of reforming the system from the outside with a lot of English speakers that I think can legitimately say, look, we don't have a seat at the table and we should.
Yeah, and similar to telcos, there's countries that when things went cellular, they didn't lay copper lines, they leapfrogged that. And I think that India could be a great example of leapfrogging traditional financial infrastructure and going straight to crypto and the cloud and banking the unbanked with smartphones.
I mean, it's insane when you walk around a town in the US and you see all these brick and mortar banks.
Yeah.
It's such expensive infrastructure.
It's really,
why do you need that?
I mean, the only thing about it is it does have in-person verification. That part is the only thing where, you know, some kind of proof of human or some but that's about it. Everything else should be done.
So we push back on that.
Oh, go ahead.
And say we can KYC and understand people better
online,
remotely and online.
Okay. That's it.
In 90 seconds or less.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because that's an important area of predator prey because of AI.
Right.
So that's going to make it easier to fake the online stuff. That's why you're seeing projects like WorldCoin, Proof of Humanity, and whatnot. I think you're going to need a bunch of signals to prove that somebody's human, and that's going to become an important. How we do that is going to be an important thing for the whole world. But that's like the digital passport to online services. And I think it's something to keep on your radar. I love your thoughts.
Yeah, we actually talked about this.
Yes, we
not
did.
Not too long ago.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
The idea of crypto being able to authenticate and ferret out something that's real and authentic versus a video that's a deep fake.
Right.
And so that seems like a really important piece of the future to be a part of.
Yeah, and I think one of the earliest ideas around that would be something like the spam coin or Hashcash.
Right.
Where to send like a fraction of a penny with an email, it sort of verifies that the person's real because it becomes cost prohibitive. If you're sending billions of spam emails, that becomes expensive. So by requiring a fraction of some token or crypto, you can eradicate spam and create sort of verifiability or authenticity around that.
Yes. Or
like a cost, I guess.
Or you could lock a deposit or something like that.
Yeah. A simple way is you create, if the internet gave us abundance, crypto gives us scarcity and value. And so it's expensive to send that email. And you could toggle that up or down. But like Cameron said, if someone's spamming out a billion emails a day, which I'm sure they probably hit those numbers, then if you charge a quarter or 50 cents or a dollar, that's it's $1 billion to abuse the system.
And that was actually one of Satoshi's first thoughts about what Bitcoin could be used for, in fact.
Right. So AI could make spam and phishing so effective that we finally shift to a standard where you have to attach some value to email. Otherwise, it just gets out of control.
Yep.
I think that could happen, could finally tip things over.
Just have to get alternatives. I mean, it's already something where how much of your email are like corporate messages and so on. Most of your true inbox is your, you know, Signal, your WhatsApp, your DM, your this and that. Those are like the lower spam inboxes, right? Versus email, especially like, you know, your Slack is within your corporation, right? Discord within your community. And then email is becoming more and more just like password resets and phishing. Actually, you know, I wanted to ask you guys, like, okay, so obviously we think about crypto a lot. What do you think comes after crypto? I have ideas. I'd love to hear yours.
After in what sense?
Well, like growing out of, like in the sense of, you know, Web 2 leads to Web 3. Web 3 uses aspects of Web 2. Like what other things are you interested in, you know, like adjacent things, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so we spent a lot of time. I guess the last 2 years have been dominated a lot by DeFi, re-architecting traditional financial services in a decentralized, permissionless, trustless manner. And then NFTs, creating assets around digital art and collectibles. I think that is just getting started. Obviously, NFTs have cooled off quite a bit, but I think they're still here to stay. And we're going to see, I mean, everybody... We've collected and created art since the beginning of time. And to create that in the metaverse and Web3, you're going to want NFTs. That's just a human need, want, desire. So I think that we're going to see more of that. The intersection of gaming and crypto could be pretty interesting. We've talked a lot about interoperability. Like, can you carry those game shields with you to another game or sell them or trade them or store them rather than the walled garden approach. So I think that intersection will be cool. I think the intersection of crypto and AI is fast approaching. And
machines are not going to get bank accounts at JP Morgan.
Right.
Machines talk to protocols like Ethereum and Bitcoin. And you could argue that crypto is really built for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the crypto is the internet of money. The first internet 1.0 didn't have money on it. I mean, PayPal really skinned the current banking system on it. But crypto is purpose-built money for the internet. And so we talk about it being the internet of money, or mm-hmm. the greatest social network of all time. And that's pretty important. Imagine having an economy without money. Then you have a system of barter, and we know the shortcomings there. And so AI is going to want money. You're going to want AI to use money, interact, and be part of commerce and trade and the financial system. And crypto is the way to do that.
We should flash back to a clip. I don't know if you remember, I think we did a TechCrunch Disrupt all the way back in 2013.
Yeah.
And I think we were talking about using Bitcoin, like me, you, Novel, we were talking about using Bitcoin for self-driving cars to like pay them like
machines.
That is going to happen. It's kind of already happening with trading bots, right? The headless version, right? Because those are already trading back and forth. Then it just has to be physically embodied.
I actually kind of found Bitcoin totally unexpectedly. We were on vacation two summers ago in Ibiza and ran into a guy. Of all places, right?
Just add to what Naval was saying about programmable money. Here's like a couple of applications that you could envision. So fast forward 5 years or something, and there's the Uber, Google, Tesla merger of dispatching and automatic cars, and you know, it's built into Tesla cars, and you've got them running on the freeway, and one car, you know, you want to accelerate, and you pay in Bitcoin automatically to the cars in front of you a passing price. Right? So you can just boom like this and just go through the fast lane. They just move
out. It's got to be anonymous. It's got to be cash. Because if you're doing credit, you could charge back as soon as you pass them.
Right.
Deep Blue finally beat Kasparov in the third match in the
1990s. Yeah, I don't know how many matches it was, but it did take a while. It was 97, I think, ish.
Okay, right? 97. Yeah. So AI computer is the best chess player in the world. How long before AI is the best investor in the world and much better orders matter much better than a Warren Buffett?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's interesting because in theory, you could have an investor have an AI that is slurping up all the same information they are.
Right.
And then trained on all the trades they're making.
Yep.
Right. That is feasible to do.
I mean, reading all the S1s.
Reading all the S1s.
All the news. It's just parsing all the wires.
And it stores it all locally. It's just parsing your screen, your computer screen. Of course, you have to figure out the security on this. It's very private kind of stuff.
Right.
But that's actually where crypto comes in also, because you have decentralized storage. Everything is stored locally.
So I don't see this a lot being talked about yet, but the current state of AI is going to look like the current state of the web. Web 2.0, which is basically, it's centralized. It's five data cartels. When you log into the internet today, you're logging to five companies.
Right.
Facebook, Instagram, Amazon. It's not the open, decentralized web that Tim Berners-Lee envisioned. And so AI is that heading down the same path.
Right.
Of this centralized few companies where you got to run your data. They have it. The privacy, the security, those issues, and it's controlled by a few. And so do we want that world, or do we want the decentralized world where there's decentralized AI and you can fund with crypto and control your data and whatnot? So we should talk about how crypto enables a better AI world.
Absolutely. I mean, the way I kind of think about it, some people say, it's buzzword bingo to talk about like AI and crypto and so on together.
Right.
Acknowledging that it can sound like that, I think I distinguish AI. Actually, in the Never Save book, I talked about this a bit, and I'm writing more on this. But I think AI, crypto, and social are actually particular kinds of technologies that are different from, let's say, electric cars and spaceships, as awesome as those things are. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that the electric car, the spaceship, you know, those kinds of things are, they're like tools. Right. Whereas crypto is how humans, you know, do money and contracts. Social is how they communicate. And AI actually often replaces the human themselves, right? So these are like three sort of governance slash social tools. And they're like tools for how you'd structure a political system, a social system, and so on. Whereas I feel like electric cars, spaceships, stuff like that are awesome, but they're more on the outside. They're more like devices as opposed to like the brain, the operation.
Right. It's like it's hardware that gets you from A to B versus software language.
Yes. How people communicate, how they transact, how they compute and think, right? Mm-hmm. It's like thinking, transaction, I don't know, talking.
Maybe it's like, that's it's almost the tribe versus you by yourself.
There we go. Exactly. That's right. And the reason I think that's interesting is if you take that triangle of like AI, social, crypto, you can actually have both decentralized and centralized versions of each. Like, you know, like Thiel talked about AI is centralized and crypto is decentralized. And I think that's true to first order. Then second order, you can have centralized AI, like you guys were just talking about, centralized crypto, like CBDC, and then centralized social, which is, of course, you know, like the original social networks. Now you can have decentralized crypto, of course, the original, you know, and kind of what we all hopefully stand for. You have decentralized AI, which is like Stable Diffusion or Llama, where all the weights are out there in public and anybody, you know, not your weights, not your model, right? Unfortunately, that's got a lot of traction. There's a Google memo a little while ago that said Google is losing to, Google and OpenAI are both losing to the decentralized version, right? Wow. And to be clear, I have massive respect for everything that they've built at Google and at OpenAI. Respect Sam, respect Satya, respect Sundar, respect all of them. But I do want the decentralized version of AI. And we also, of course, want decentralized social. And so it's good that Jack is doing Noster. It's good that, you know, Dan Romero is doing Farcaster. It's good that Elon has decentralized Twitter to a greater extent than it was before. It's like more free speech, you know? So we kind of have like decentralized and centralized versions of each. I'd love your, you know, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Our view is that decentralized versions will win in the long term. If you look at Meta, they're building a centralized metaverse. I think that some people might enjoy that and there could be pros to that approach, but I think that the decentralized one will ultimately win out. That's where the builders and developers want to build because it's open, trustless, permissionless. You're not going to get rugged. And I think that's the ethos of the
value accrues to the users and not five companies and five CEOs.
It's interesting because, you know, we're talking like the day after Apple launched its new headset. And on that topic, I actually think it's possible that Facebook, Zuck has talked about open metaverse, right? Mm-hmm. And Apple generally tries to do things closed. So it's possible that Apple versus Facebook looks like Apple versus Google. That is to say, Apple did iOS closed and then Android was kind of like the more open smartphone version. And so it's possible that Apple's headset is like the more closed version and Facebook may lean into openness simply as the same kind of strategy. Because often you have that, you know, Apple versus Android, Apple versus Microsoft, or Microsoft versus Linux. It's almost like
you have a Pepsi Coke, 7-Up World, or Hertz Avis.
Exactly. And so, that's right. So centralized, decentralized, are almost like that. But the centralized one is polished, but it's also like enclosed and you can't do anything with it and you're right. And the decentralized version is messier, but it's what the hackers want, the builders want, you know, and so on. And so you have this constant tension between the two. I hope that the decentralized world, I think you're right that it quote wins, but it doesn't have to win to 100% to win. Mm-hmm. It just needs to have a sustainable share of the market so that freedom continues to exist. That's at least how I see it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard for a centralized company to go decentralized because it's
cultural.
It's cultural. It's changing your DNA. It's changing, you know, a zebra changing its stripes. It's just really hard to do. Yes. And you have to disrupt and cannibalize yourself. So I think the decentralized options are probably going to come from startups, de novo, and new efforts. I'm sure Apple will build an incredible experience as they always do. The question is, are people going to want to pay 30% tax, VAT, to them every time they purchase something?
Right.
And so right now, I don't think the App Store allows any app that sells NFTs unless Apple gets 30%. And so the experience is going to have to be so much better for people want to pay.
I hadn't thought of that. So let me ask you guys. So here's what I think is next, or part of what's next. You know, just like you start a company with a small amount of capital, I think we can now start startup communities with a small amount of political capital. Mm. Okay, so just like someone has saved some money and they can start a company or they get some venture investment, you've built up some following on Twitter or somewhere else, and now you can actually start bootstrapping in-person communities, meetups and things like that. This is something I'm interested in. This is what I've written the network state about. It's basically, you can start a small community, you build it larger, you get 100, then 1,000 paying members. Now you can actually start crowdfunding even a small town or something like that, right? And maybe you start by crowdfunding brunch and you move on to crowdfunding buildings, okay? The kinds of stuff that you can do here, of course, you can have like a crypto city, right? Or a crypto town.
Right.
And you know, you could have, I don't know, the I wouldn't call it the Gemini Garage. If there was a word for towns that started with G. So I'd love to know the kinds of things that, you know, we talk about in the Network State book is, if you could build a small town, a small city, what would you build? And, you know, just to motivate that, for example, there's cul-de-sac.com. And that is a startup city that I'm a seed investor in Arizona, which is like a car-free zone, mm-hmm. right? Then there's Kift, and it's the total opposite. It's like van life. Rather than living without cars, you literally live in a van, but you save so much money. And you've got these base stations, you can drive around the whole Midwest, right? And there's like Prospera, which is, then there's like Prospera in like South America. That's like a free city in South America, like English speaking. There's Cabin in Austin, which is like almost like a college town trying to rebuild that. So people are trying to build different visions of the good,
right?
You know? So what would the, you know, like Romulus and Remus, you know, founding Rome, okay? Right? Like what is the Gemini, what is the Winklevoss town, you know, look like?
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
I haven't thought too much about that.
So one that is for innovation.
Yes.
One that is a city where builders can build. And if there has to be laws, laws should be hard to create and easy to repeal.
Yes.
In the US currently, it's inverted.
Right.
They're kind of easy to create and they stay on the books forever. That's why you have these crazy laws in some municipalities where if you steal someone's lobster pot trap, right. they can shoot you.
Right.
It's really hard to get laws off the book. So small government stays out of people's lives as much as possible. And it's very much, you wrote a great article about the inverse Amish.
Yes, that's right.
And so I think a lot of those principles and values of a place where people can innovate and create really cool stuff and do meaningful work and build the future and deliver, as Founders Fund says, you know, you promised us flying cars and we got 140 characters. A place where someone could build flying cars.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, I would say that the U.S., I guess, in large part because people had to work to get there. You had to show proof of work to show up in the U.S. It attracted a certain psychographic among people who really believed in that manifest destiny. And the rags to riches stories and the pursuit of those different things. And I think the framers got it really right, but somehow we seem to have lost our way and people aren't focused on the future and building a better future and the growth, and we're focused on all these other things. And I think hopefully it swings back, but I think you could take the Constitution. I mean, it's the code of America and it's worked pretty well for a while, and then maybe iterate on that. But I think it's still a pretty darn good starting point.
So, right. So we are kind of like the pro-freedom movement that is allowing exit from this, you know, system. We are like the equivalent of Jackson Vanek. And the USA is, or the federal government at least, has become like the new USSR. Like that's actually like, really, that's why, I mean, of course I believe in innovation and so on, but it's amazing how important it is what we're doing. Like,
And so as a consumer, your ability to, okay, I'm going to try this city state for a while. Oh, it's not going the right direction, or I'm value misaligned. I'm going to pick up and move to another one.
Exactly.
And so we're very passionate about this. And this is what we think crypto does, is give people more choice, independence, and opportunity. And that's why Gemini exists, is to usher in crypto, because it provides that. It unlocks the next era of personal, financial, and creative freedom. And so I think a situation where you can, the right to exit is super important. I'd love to see that more globally because people get stuck. They get stuck with the current currency, the current laws, the current government and whatnot. And I think the world would be a better place if you could just go GALT more easily.
Yes, from the two-party system to the N-city system. Just be able to choose between them. Great. Well, we got, cool. This is great. Guys, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much.